Okay. I'm Mosoka P. Fala. Currently, I serve as the founding director of the National Popular Institute of Liberia, one of those things that will develop as a result of Ebola. And for the last three flare-ups, I have been the lead from the incident management system to support the counties. Okay. So I've been leading the three last response. With specialization into case investigation and contact tracing. Yeah. And so I got involved with Ebola sometime in late March when the first suspected case came in Lofa. I had come on a CDC USAID project, and that was only a maternal child health mortality issue. I got called upon that there was a new case by my current boss, Tobo Nyiswa. He was then an assistant minister, and we got involved. And I was then doing general support. It was just discussing issues. And then there was a suspect case that came to where I grew up, the slum community I grew up. Mm-hmm. The first day that I left from Lofa and came to Montserrat, ended up in Chikinsu Factory. Chikinsu Factory is a squatter's camp. Poor people were my parents, where I grew up. So it became very personal for me. Mm-hmm. I got involved and I led the team to see the contacts and investigate the case. Mm-hmm. Eventually, I started to support the Montserrat County Health Team. The Montserrat County Health Team, I was supporting them in training people, contact tracing. My own background in training in infectious disease epidemiology had given me general background, new things like alert case, index case, contact tracing, but not in Ebola as an area. So of course it meant I had to go through a school. I began to learn and read on materials that happened in Congo, the DRC, WHO. I was reading, I started teaching, reading and teaching, and then eventually I see on control I found the NGO ACF advertise a position for someone to be a response manager. They had a little funding from the Swedish aid.
Okay.
And they wanted somebody with no money, was peanuts compared to what I was making when I was at USAID. But I took it because I wanted a structure.
Okay.
So I started working with ACF, and the goal was for us to, it was two main goals, develop health promotion and develop contact tracing.
Okay.
However, MSF had also come in at the same time, I want to do contact tracing and ETU management. So we had a couple of meetings and were finally resolved that ACS should concentrate on contact tracing and the other partners and record would do health promotion.
Okay.
So we had to zero in on contact tracing.
So that became your job?
In my job now in Montserrat County. Yeah, the largest. And at the time, Montserrat has only two zones.
Mm-hmm.
When we took over in sometime in July, there were at least cases in 11 of the zones. So it wasn't as spread.
Okay.
I had read and I was very confident that with effective contact tracing, we'll be able to end the outbreak. I remember someone asking Mosoka, what can you say? I said, give me 2 weeks.
Hmm.
I will learn later on that the outbreak response for EVD is it has component that have to be interlinked. Even if you find the contacts, the contact gets sick and you can't take them out of the community because there's a lack of ambulance. If there are no ETUs to take them, if their bodies are picked up and the contacts are not land listed, there are technical things that must happen to make you to succeed in containing EVD. And in my naive mind, I thought once I get the guys up, I train them, have supervisor will work. But then I realized that it was much more bigger than that.
Yeah.
And then by July, the things kept on exploding. Even though we had, the first thing I did when I became directly responsible for contact tracing was to do an assessment of the capacity. Because it was firstly, back in June, WHO supported contact tracing for the Montserrat County Health Team. There was some structure in place. They experimented that the supervision of contact tracing should be at the health district level.
Yeah.
Montserrat was complicated enough to regulate contact tracing at a district level.
Okay.
Because Liberia is divided into health districts.
91.
They just added one more now to make it 92.
I see.
The one we just been added.
Okay.
So the level at which coordination takes place for health delivery service at the district level, Montserrat had 5 now going to 7. It was in district, but it became very apparent to us that the size of the population, the heterogeneity of the population between very densely populated urban slums and isolated rural areas will make contact tracing in Montserrat to be looked down at the level of district will be difficult. So we took a step back and decided to move intervention at the zonal level.
Right.
So each of these were bringing down the zone, and those zones were created by WHO for immunization campaigns. Okay. So it was took my first job to look at that at the zonal level and see why it existed, to work with the county surveillance officer and understand what was happening, I came back and I wrote a small report and said that there were issues in communication, there were issues in training, and now the next step was to now start to provide training.
Yeah.
And I realized that it had to be a complex system, because in contact tracing, there are three components of contact tracing. The first comes with contact identification.
Yeah.
It's the first thing. You must identify who are the contacts. So first of all, you must establish the case.
Yeah.
So there is a case investigation. There's a case definition that's established. Based on that, you know the case. Then you find the contacts.
Mm-hmm.
That portion of contact identification most often is done by the case investigation team.
Okay, so that would be different people from the contact tracing.
Well, yeah, eventually I will come to control all, because it became apparent that if you didn't treat it as a unit, you had a problem. So our first thing was it was two different groups.
Yeah.
But it became very apparent that it had to be treated as one unit. That's contact identification. Once you identify the contact based on the type of exposure to the case, then you come to what we call land listing of contact.
Mm-hmm.
So you list the contacts to that case, and the level of exposure. After that, technically, the contact tracing, or contact tracing in the contact we're looking at the beginning, is contact follow-up.
Mm.
Because from the moment you get the land listing, you then go ahead and take each of those contacts and give them a contact tracing form that has 21 days of symptomatic observation 2 times a day.
Okay.
So the typical contact tracing now begins the what? The contact follow-up,
mm-hmm.
to see the contact every day. 21 days.
And that's the job of the contact tracer.
At the time when we started, that was out the habit of looking. So we had a case investigation team and a contact tracing team. Normally they would put all and call it epi surveillance, but we had it separated. We had a case investigation team, the contact tracing. So my job was really to train this group to do contact follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
But very soon, by August, when the case spiraled out of control, there were limited case investigators.
Mm-hmm.
Because of limited vehicle and logistics. And the contact tracers were going to the homes and seeing contact becoming symptomatic and not picked up.
Yeah.
Contacts dying. I mean, I remember one of the girls literally resigned from me. She said, "Mosoka, I can't do the job anymore." She said, "I've seen the mother die, the sister die, I promise them there will be someone who will pick them up. No one to pick them up. I'm out of this job." She resigned. So eventually it became necessary to go back and let the contact tracers to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
So then they were doing contact listing, identification, land listing, and follow-up, because they were stretched.
Yeah.
For 11 now, we're going all 22 areas had cases.
Yeah.
So we're stretching, essentially stretching.
Yeah, so that coordination between case management and contact tracing, it broke down.
Because there's too many cases for them to go to, and the contact tracer will call them and say, "Come, we have a case." They don't have a vehicle.
Yeah.
Even if they go and solve a case and investigate, they don't have an ET to take them. So it just became broken down.
Mm-hmm.
So giving contact to do all that job was like a makeshift stop gap, band-aid solution.
That's also overloading the contact.
That's exactly the point.
Yeah.
So then what thing happened? You overload them. They become inefficient.
Yeah.
They came to the true contact follow-up they need to do.
Yeah.
They miss contact. They will not pick up symptom on time. And so contact dies. So it's like a feed-forward system. One leads to another, and you amplify the disease. So August, September, we're just in that kind of mode.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So you mentioned in the beginning, you came in to assess the situation,
right?
But going back to June.
Yeah, exactly.
So what were the key issues that you identified then, and specifically describe some?
I wrote a report that said supervision.
Yeah.
That because of the diverse, how far apart the county was, there had to be a centralized monitoring team.
Yeah.
So I developed a team and said there has to be monitors that will have to see the supervisor. So first of all, I was to create a structure.
Okay.
There will be contact tracer, there will be supervisor in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
But they are told that there may be a new layer.
Mm-hmm.
Monitors that will go in the field physically with vehicles and see each of the supervisor every day.
Okay.
One, for supervision purpose, but two also, there has to be a way if a contact becomes symptomatic to have the data back.
Yeah.
He has to get new, because every time there's a case, he generates new contacts. Someone has to take the record to him.
Yeah.
And bring the records back to us in the ministry for it to be collated into the data.
Yeah.
So that was lacking. So I asked for that. We're constructing one vehicle for that purpose.
Mm.
We might rent two vehicles. Can you imagine split Mazarari into two zooms and get two monitors? Imagine the guys will leave in the morning and we'll have that, and then initiated operation meetings.
Yeah.
There will be one meeting in the morning and one meeting at 5.
Okay.
I then told them, I said, "Don't borrow the morning meeting.
Yeah.
Come at 5 o'clock in the evening." And they had to bring a report from the field delivery to us.
Okay, physically collect the papers and bring
it to us, and we'll review it and then give it to the data unit to analyze. So imagine.
Yeah.
And before the Ebola ends, we end up going to 13 teams. Before we end up, when we got control, we went to 13 monitoring teams, but you just started from two. Imagine.
Okay, so supervision and data management were some
it
of the
was the data feedback, the data feedback. They were not responsible for the data, but it was a point of contact between the mutual health data unit and the feed. What actually happened to the feed? You got to be sending people every day.
Yeah. So recruiting people to become contact tracers.
Right.
So it's a personnel problem.
Right.
So how did you go about getting those people?
Excellent question. It was one of the toughest situations. And it will get better when I became part of the Mozzarella IMS.
Okay. That was towards November, right?
Yes, it will get even better. There was a troubling problem. I want to explain to you why.
Okay.
So we inherited contact tracing from the county health team.
Mm-hmm. Is this something that had existed before, like before Ebola?
No.
Okay.
These guys were either environmental health people in the community, provide health promoters.
I see.
GCHBs. They will bring them on to immunize campaign, and they were just guys that had some kind of linkage across the county that could be brought to do vaccination. So, and those very guys were brought back now to do this role.
I see.
So here in this group, there were good ones, but there were ones that were terrible, incompetent. So it was a personal issue first of all.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the supervisors became the, some of them became district surveillance officers from the news that we inherited to. Some of them became district surveillance officers, district health officers. At the time, we don't have district surveillance officers.
Okay.
Some of them were district health officers. Vaccine supervisors.
Mm-hmm.
So you had the good ones,
okay.
But you had the ones that were just terrible.
Yeah.
So we had personnel supervision issues, the get-go.
Yeah.
And also because they had already been working in the system, some of them were not recruited from the communities. So that became another problem. And we have to, later on we have to shift that and say, they must come from communities. Yes.
Okay.
And you know what happened when you have personnel transfer? Mm-hmm. You have a new center to set people there, from a government setting to an NGO standard setting. But the NGO was like, ACS was saying that we can't employ them as ACS staff, we support the Ministry of Health. So I'm caught up between these two roles, helping the NGO to do it, but the NGO is saying I don't want to take full responsibility.
Yeah.
When I became head of case detection, I could hire and fire. I could then dismiss immediately. And this is November, now. I could hire and dismiss.
Okay.
I said, Mama, you can't call the job, go back to the Ministry of Health, do something else. Because in my capacity as a member of the Mozzarella IMS, I have that power to do it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But in the beginning,
it was a challenge. We're trying to do. We couldn't dismiss. We had to recommend to the, and then ACS didn't want to be the one dismissing. They had to recommend to the CSO. So that was a challenge in the beginning.
So how did you? So you inherit these? Like just in broad figures, how many contact tracers did you inherit?
77 and 22 supervisors.
Okay. So, and the supervisors were already called supervisors at that point.
Yeah, trained associate supervisors.
Okay.
But what I did, I had inactive and active supervisors.
Okay.
Because remember, we started with 11 Zooms having cases. Those supervisors went into active mode.
Okay.
The 11 Zooms were deactivated, they would say, do health promotion, do education. So they were, they are stopping. So ACL will get them some minimum stopping.
Mm-hmm.
Minimum stopping. So another second thing I also reported in my fee assessment was logistics.
Mm-hmm.
Notepads, pens, sheets, were all lacking. Bulk bag. ACL did a great job.
Okay, so then.
ACL brought and provided that. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you retrain the contact tracers? And what did that training involve then? So I guess all you can do is
just training and supervising. So just training, because in the visual Ghana, CDC provided training. At the time, it was PowerPoint presentation and training.
Okay.
Some simulation. But then I had a good friend of mine from CDC. She said to me, she said, Mosoka, this is going to be my mentorship. The best thing you will give. She said, so that's how my pushing was. Get the very best among them. You provide mentorship, they see you do.
Okay.
You ask them for feedback, you brief and debrief, they see you do.
Yeah. Meaning you would go into the field with them. Okay. What was your, the day-to-day job of a contact tracer in the beginning?
You will go in the morning, see the families. At the time, there were no thermal scan. Ask them question. Fever, malaria, typical, fill it up.
Okay.
The thing I will see is that, for example, is this guy engaging the people? Is he looking at their faces?
Yeah.
And I ask the simple question, how many male and female do you have in your group? Because on average, one person will call around 10 persons.
Okay.
How many male and female you have? Ask them and say, you don't know your job. I'm not even asking you for their names. If you don't even know their sex, so that we cannot tell what to do.
Right. It means that they're not observing.
No way, exactly.
Yeah.
Then I ask, how many of them you know them by names?
Yeah.
How many babies and children you know? I say, because it's going to come from that. This is subjective reporting.
Mm.
This man is going to lie. How do you know from the day you saw his face when you started doing contact tracing and 5 days later on when you saw him? Yes. Because even when using thermoscan, people either separated themselves or or 30% at least of the cases that don't have typical fever, no fever, right?
Okay.
30. So then we had a white facial expression, white jacket. So it was an act. Yeah. But there was also the issue of dishonesty. You may say one is on the contact tracer will lie and fill the form. I can ask you a presenter to you lie on the form.
Yeah. So how did you try to address that?
Yeah, so then I always said something. Looking back in retrospect, that's an inverse correlation. The more organized the response becomes, the more experienced people enter the response, they show, you see, it's just quite good. There is an inverse relationship. The more you become organized, the more you provide resources, the more the cases drop. It's just like starting with the national IMS,
okay,
taking together as a group.
Mm-hmm.
Then we came together like Hans Rosling, as I get the additional good support. Mm-hmm. Hans Rosling came in and said, Mosoka, we got to do maps. And then we map Amorovia into cases, so we look at this, we zero in.
Yeah.
Things like mapping Amorovia. So the first thing we did was, then we broke the monitoring team to 30.
Okay.
30 monitoring team with vehicles. These are the ones that go in the field with vehicles.
So this is different from the 22 supervisors?
Yes, from two.
Okay.
Then the supervisor came from 22 to 33.
Okay.
We created additional 11 supervisors and made them mobile supervisors. Yeah. So we realized that increased macro management, increased supervision.
Yeah.
And I remember Hans looking at me and saying to me, Mosoka, the point you're getting that I thought we are picking, we're coming down. He said, Mosoka, now you're going to have the black people because it's going to be quality and no more quantity.
Yeah.
He said, Epic, it was quantity, but now it's going to be quality. You're going to have to produce your very best.
Yeah.
He said, let me say, you got to now find your very best.
And this is around November.
Yes, yes, I was like the very best now.
Yeah.
So, July, August, we're trying our best, right? But talking about order in chaos, that's what you might imagine.
Yeah.
People lying, people cheating, and we gotta be running here and there.
Yeah.
So it was like an order in chaos.
Yeah.
Supervisors are cheating, limited resources, people are frustrated. And then in the typical Ebola response, the face of the response are the contact tracers.
Yes.
If there's no food labeling, the contact tracers.
Yeah.
If the relative gets sick in the call, and they don't have a response with labeling, the contact tracers. There were instances when my contact tracers were taken as hostage.
Yeah.
I had to deal, those are the things I had to deal every day.
Yeah.
That they are taking my hostage, and the guy is saying, Dad, we're not going to release your contact tracer until you take the dead body who has been here for 2 days now. And we called the team camp, and they took them as hostage, some of them were literally attacked.
Around what time was the
tension? This is around August, September.
Okay, this was the peak of this
tension. The peak of the epidemic.
Yeah.
And the poor guy got to go every day.
Yeah.
So the frustration is where? It's on them.
Yeah.
People are not coming, they don't have food. They call it the hardline, no response, and who do they see every day? The contact tracers.
Yeah.
And you're talking about ammo, no pressure, everything that happens goes for is the contact tracing.
Mm.
As soon as there's an outbreak, I get a call from CDC, from the WHO, the Minister of Health, and calling me.
Yeah.
So you gotta deal with that kind of response and deal with. So I think I was sleeping like 5 hours a day,
yeah,
or less. Mm. And people thought I would have a heart attack, but it was chaotic.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have the disease spiraling out of control.
Mm-hmm.
The resources are still shrinking. You don't have to build more ETUs, you know, right?
Yeah.
There are no lot of ambulances.
Yeah.
So you have people, and it's people getting more infected.
Mm.
Resistance is there. Distrust is there. Added to that. Yeah, it was, yeah.
Okay, so that sounds like a nightmare scenario, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what is the shift that addresses that?
Excellent. Then West Point happened.
Hmm.
West Point, I would tell you, was a blessing in disguise. First and most importantly, West Point taught us was that the top-down approach was not going to work. We quickly realized that. West Point taught us that.
And up until then, you would say it was a top-down approach?
All the time, a top-down approach.
Hmm.
Even after West Point, we take a while for us to convince people that we have to reverse the model.
I see.
And the only way we did that because we succeeded in West Point so seriously that the Minister of Health called me one day and said, the current Minister said, Mosoka, you can't repeat what you have done in West Point. So now the dynamic changed a little bit. So on the one hand, we have the contact tracing, right?
Yeah.
But it has to work with community and people.
Yeah.
West Point happens now, they've got to create a second layer of people.
Yeah.
That's why you see once the guys work with me, now we created what we call the CBR, the Community Based Initiative for Started.
Okay. community-based
initiative aside, and the goal of the government was to do the active surveillance. They would be the ones that would knock down on those who look for the sick.
Okay.
They would be the ones that would do horizontal communication, neighbors to neighbors.
Okay.
It's not vertical. They would be the ones that would go from their neighbors and get an education, don't hire the sick. So it will be
So this is now not contact traces, these are more social mobilizing or
between surveillance, so or active surveillance. Active. Contact tracing by nature is a passive surveillance, so I can explain it too.
Okay.
Contact tracing is a bit passive surveillance. Mm-hmm. Why is it passive surveillance? First of all, there has to be a case,
yeah.
There has to be an alert, there has to be an investigation, there has to be land listing, right?
Mm.
That's a passive surveillance.
Yeah.
We realize that dialogue can work. You need guys who know their community, respecting their community, go and sit literally for the sick.
I see. So the model here is shifting from passive surveillance to active surveillance.
No, to run a parallel.
To run both.
Yes, to run both.
Ah, okay.
So the guys in the community will be the ones searching for the sick.
Mm-hmm.
Once they get the sick, they will get a contact tracer to move in.
I see.
And the case investigator will move in, will investigate. It got to the point where we realized that, look, one, the case investigator goes in, does the land listing,
mm-hmm.
sends it to the Ministry of Health.
Mm-hmm.
Like President of the US, I can say one seminar, you know, Avenue, you know my house.
Yeah.
It's beyond West Point, beyond the river.
Yeah.
If the guy took on the answer, he lost that contact.
Yeah.
That guy become a potential source of a further spread.
Yeah.
So the new developer was contact tracers and investigator moved literally to there. When there's a light, the investigator goes there, the supervisor moved there.
I see.
He investigates, he learns, the contact tracer takes there and begins his engagement immediately.
Okay.
That will come later on in November. October, November, introduce that method.
Okay.
That they got to move together.
So you were essentially pairing up different parts of the response.
So they can operate as a unit.
So, yeah, so they become a unit.
Yes. So now, introduce the third piece. Hey, well, how are you? Introduce the third piece now. The third piece is that
okay.
is the active surveillance now. But the active surveillance will only be led by community leaders. So our strategy, you see the office here now, the way was we had three strategies. One, engage the community in a town hall meeting.
Okay.
Tell the community, the first thing we do, we apologize that we don't top down approach, we are sorry.
Right.
Then the second thing we do, we listen to them. We don't say a single word in this, they vent their frustration.
Mm.
And we'll write it down, we'll write what we're doing, and on CBR.
Yeah.
Then we'll take it and group it into team. So you guys say your frustration is the ambulance don't come on time.
Yeah.
No feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll ask them, what do you suggest?
Mm-hmm.
We saw something started happening right there. They started getting sense of empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
Sense of we are in control.
Mm-hmm.
And so our philosophy begins, the community lead and we follow. So literally I literally wrote the training material for CBR, literally from my head. There was no existing material for active surveillance. I had to use the TB model. Because in TB, they do active surveillance in TB. That's why I took the original material that I developed for training.
Okay.
I came from studying research in the TB, tuberculosis,
okay.
Those active surveillance. That's why I took the model and I read and developed training materials.
Based on those.
The active surveillance had a key job of one, horse-to-horse search.
Mm-hmm.
Doing horse-to-horse education now. As a neighbor telling your neighbor,
mm-hmm.
my man is not right. They will do when the contact is missing, go ahead hiding.
Yeah.
They will be the one that will help to find that contact. They will take care of resistance because they are in the communities.
Yes.
We hire imam, we hire pastors,
mm-hmm.
local leaders became part of us. So
right.
Now we have the CBR active surveillance in the community,
mm-hmm.
contact resource here, case investigator now moving in.
Mm-hmm.
Each one complementing.
Yeah.
If by chance there's a case that don't pick up by the investigator, the active case number because we gave one of them was to call 40 horses every day. Go from house to horse.
So the team altogether, or just the active surveillance would
the
go?
The active would do horse to horses.
Okay, and they had a requirement to do 40 houses?
Every single person would do 40 houses.
Okay.
At the height of the epidemic, we hire 5,400 people from Mosorado County.
And these would be called active surveillance officers?
Active, we call them ACF, active case finders.
Active
case finders.
Okay.
That would be recruitment.
Yeah.
So they share their frustration with us, right? They bring the solution to us, and we'll say, we have this method. But when we developed it in West Point,
mm-hmm.
we're not even written down in our head somewhere.
Yeah.
We started discussing, and I remember Dr. Dan, the current minister, all of us sitting there.
Yeah.
And we said, okay, gentlemen, we had a big town meeting. How many zones you guys have? We have 7 zones. How many communities you guys have? 4 blacks in each zones. Okay, gentlemen, let's say we get 3 persons. You guys, each of zone decide. So this letter, who they wanted.
Okay.
And this letter that leads us, all we did for them. Then we kind of get a simple training. What to do.
So the community could select
who they want to be the active case finders.
Ah.
They did selection. our job was to come into the training. Once we do the training, we started giving them this ordinary notebook to write.
Yeah.
Full sick. And guess how the message was coming to me? The supervisor for that era was small razzle. They sent it to me, SFS. Then I would compile it into the minister. It works so successfully, the minister, Westman hit and went like this.
Yeah.
The minister comes and said, Muzuka, we gotta scale this up.
So, but you surely can't receive SMSs from 5,400 people, right?
That's a good point. Then that way Yale University, Yale School of Public Health came in.
Okay.
The Center for Infectious Disease Modeling from Yale came in with that.
Okay.
That was one thing, and we have published a couple of papers from that arrangement. For the Center for Infectious Disease Modeling.
Center for Infectious.
Infectious Disease Modeling and Analysis.
Ah, okay.
At Yale. Two of those PhD students decided to come from the US to come to see what they could do. They saw our concept to develop a cell phone platform, a mobile app.
Okay.
A mobile app was developed by them. They bought a 425 ordinary cell phone, 25 cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
We bought them and gave them to our people and trained them, and they could enter them for us. Talk about innovation. Some of those guys would find a signal in a tree, and they would climb in the tree to send signal to us.
So through that app, that the information will go to you?
And then we'll analyze the information and then we'll do a response. And then we'll pass the information to the community,
the
case investigators, but we'll also help us develop key policy. For example, we started understanding how many persons were dying, how many deaths in the community, how many deaths were buried by the burial team.
Mm-hmm.
And we can tell the guy, the IMS gentleman, 50 persons died last week.
Yeah.
Only 10 were safely buried. Mm-hmm. There are 30 deaths that have not been buried. If you don't do this, the Ebola will not end. Mm-hmm. Will not have the power of the data to influence policy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I want to ask you about the data management a bit more, but the way I'm approaching the story is you have a big problem here, which is the community distrust. How do you build that with the community?
Then we start shifting to the communities.
Yeah.
Through the engagement meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Communities are taking leadership.
Yeah.
And then we realize that there are two types of leaders, the formal and informal leaders.
Mm-hmm.
There will be guys who are not elected, selected by government, but people listen to them. We begin to bring those guys on our board. Some of them were young students, college students, teachers, all age. But because the community was looking at those people to lead them,
yeah.
And we're working with those leaders, then we started getting resistance had to really go down because of that.
So you could see this based on the meeting. If there's a town hall meeting.
So Westman taught us everything.
Yeah.
But sitting there, out of chaos, West Point is quarantined, the military is confused. We have this meeting and we begin to realize, oh, this guy's people listen.
Yeah.
People listen to this guy. This guy should be our friend. He's an Austrian medic I've been doing the speaking.
Mm.
So we learn everything from.
And then you would approach that guy and say.
Yeah, exactly. He comes and becomes the lead for us.
Huh.
And we follow him. And then what's the way West Point said, well, let's take it to Cowell. Let's take it to Dwala.
Yeah.
So that's how it happened here. No textbook, is learning on the spot because there's an emergency, there's chaos.
Yeah.
So, oh no, that's the way, yeah.
About the Montserrado IMS.
Right.
So it tries to impose a different model on
mm-hmm.
this.
Mm-hmm.
But is it also true to say that four zones that were created?
Four sectors.
Yeah. Did that improve this system even further?
Oh yes. Because what happened, I became head of case detection.
Mm-hmm.
What I meant was that I have contact tracing, active case finding, case investigation under my direction now.
Okay.
And these are guys that I work with. They have some respect for me, for my work ethics and things. So it became much more coordinated.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So
because you were in control of all those.
All the four guys, they had their own leadership and team, but yeah. And then if team went out of control, I could go in.
Okay.
But they did got issues now. But it created a system what we could do. But it was a little bit difficult with the partners coming in, partner internal now get more cook in the kitchen, sort of.
Okay.
It was a good problem, but we had a bad problem because now instead of having two cooks, you're now having five cooks.
Yeah.
Things are changing, so that's the reason we saw the first tension.
So was that solved because of the zones? Because you could then say MSF, you focus on zone 2 and 3.
So sector, zones were filled within sector.
Oh, sector, yeah.
So sectors there, but the sector has zones and put them in the full sector.
Okay, mm-hmm. So how did that improve your work?
Oh, make because now we have a geographical center. A geographical center, so having one central last week to do like this.
Okay.
There is geographical center now.
So decentralized.
But then my role at that time now becomes handling major outbreaks. If there's a major, then it will be avoided. More reinforcement team, that will happen now.
I see.
If during that time there was a big outbreak in Nicotan, I will go over team.
Okay.
Then I'll go with the team, understand what is happening. But then, the guys are still been long enough, the contact resources, they have become smart. So he has a smart case who could do the job.
Yeah.
You know, I remember this young kid who, Nicotan, 23% died. He told me, he had a copy book, he wrote And this guy had been an epidemiologist, not school, but he would tell me, this case came from here, and here, and here. Wow. I was so impressed with this young man.
Yeah.
So we have, one advantage again that's helping us in our recent response is that we, as natural selection, we are getting the best ones that they are gone up.
Yeah.
And then we're doing promotion with him. Mm. The better ones are going to become supervisors. So the competence and the skills have increased.
Yeah.
So those ones who were independent of much more supervision.
Yes.
But also, don't forget, we are now increased more monitors. We are increased more supervisors. So supervision, the quality of supervision has gotten better.
Yeah.
At the granular level.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So shifting to the data management,
mm-hmm.
The story I have it at this point is that there was some data management going on, but by September, essentially, the thing had collapsed. It was clear it's not working.
I'll tell you what happened.
All right, so let's hear about that.
So we had, we got to the point where we're developing a parallel data system.
Parallel data system.
So the ministry had own data unit, right?
Okay.
But we are initially sits within what? Mosoraro County.
Yeah.
Mosoraro has a separate data unit.
Yeah.
So there's another, there was not a crosstalk going with the data.
Okay. So the county health team had their own.
So yes, that's one. Sometimes the case investigators would give the data to the data unit directly. And sometimes our guys from the field, because now they're doing contact follow-up and contact tracing and case investigation, they will have data to us too.
Yeah.
Something also happened. People are not going directly to ETU by themselves. Right? So they are investigated, but the case investigation form sits in the ETU.
Mm.
Hmm? The burial team got a funding from USAID grew to 27 burial teams. 27 burial teams in Mosoraro. Case investigation team is at 8.
Yeah.
In a normal response, you want a case investigation team to go and trigger, and that happens to be the case investigator. They should go and say, this is an Ebola death, therefore burial team moving.
Yeah.
This is a suspected case, ambulance moving to ETU. Yeah. It should be led by the case investigators.
Yeah.
Well, you have 8 case investigators and what? 27 burial teams.
So they were taking over that?
Oh, they're taking over the more of the burial.
Yeah.
Guess what is happening? Whatever data generated there does not come back.
Yeah.
Guess what happened? Which means more dead bodies are picking up with a good person being Ebola dead, but the contacts created are not established and they are not being followed.
Yeah. Because that's not the job of the burial team.
No.
Yeah.
That's one. So you got two major issues here. I think I sketched this and I made a projection. I presented this and I made a projection and I said if ABC is done, the Ebola will be controlled. Let me get me a right? For their limited ambulance. So guess what? People use private vehicles.
Yeah.
People use private ambulances and end up here. But no case investigation is done.
Yeah.
So yes, in the Ebola response, two things happen. It's a source and a contact.
Mm-hmm.
Your goal is to take the source from the population.
Yeah.
That's the key thing you want to do it.
Yeah.
So by some chance using our private vehicles, the source is getting to the ambulance. How are you? The source is getting to the ETU, right?
Yeah.
I cannot put it up. But something is happening. The contacts here, and I'm not gonna pick up going another investigator.
Yeah.
So guess what? This contact gets sick.
Yeah.
They are follow contacts.
Yeah.
So then you have a dead body by itself, dead body management.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to the same teams, they can go to all the bodies and respond quickly.
Yeah.
But they don't get information, but the data is not shared back to the LP guys.
Yeah.
Who enter the data and go to the case investigator and go to investigate. So I draw a gap and I said that this is a circle. About 60% of our contact was still accounted for.
60% are not accounted for.
Accounted for at the time, one point in time, yes, contacts.
Yeah.
I said, until we can seal up this,
we'll
not get to zero.
Yeah.
So we had a team to innovate a way to do this.
Mm.
How did we do it?
Mm-hmm.
The consortium got formed. So a friend of mine, she's now with IRC, we said that what we see was happening, we had a group of engineers to take care of different aspects of the response, and they would team as a group. So, IRC decided to take care of case investigation. ACF does contact tracing.
Okay.
Global community does the dead body management.
Okay.
Right?
This is in Mosoraro County.
In Mosoraro County.
Okay.
Other county is not there. It's happening. So, what we did here was now, since we have 27 burial teams,
mm-hmm.
we decided that we embed case investigator with a beretti. So whatever police got now is a counter for his judge. So that's where you saw the data problem coming from, right?
Yeah.
Secondly, we embed case investigator at the ETUs. So now you are very, very convinced that whatever way they come, you're going to generate contacts.
Yeah.
So these two are taken care of. This is the problem with the data and how we solve the data. But there was a, I can't remember a day when I saw 100 case investigation form from one ETU. I said, how long have you been there? One month. I said, do you understand the implication of keeping case investigation form for one month?
Yeah.
And then all the contact, we don't have them.
Yeah.
So how you create, we even had to develop our part to be able to quickly enter, take a copy of the data and send the data control person.
From the ETU?
From the ETU.
Yeah.
And then got to Hans working with Luke.
Yeah.
We had a focal person now, the smart guy, he just went to Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
I think Hans from Sky Jeff, I liked him. That kind of job now is to scan all ETU for us and get the data for us.
Okay.
That kind of job to send me information in like 10 seconds. When I say, Dakina, check this for me and let me know. Second thing that can is able to send me an alert anywhere in Liberia to tell me confirm Kim Mosoka in a red light.
Mm-hmm.
So we have someone now who's responsible.
I see.
Then we also develop what constitutes ETU discharge.
Okay.
Two negative tests plus
mm-hmm.
the clinician impression.
Okay.
Who constitute a discharge because that was a big contingent there.
Yeah.
Secondly, not all dead bodies were really Ebola dead bodies.
Mm.
But what we're doing to ourselves, because of the lack of quality or algorithm to establish whether it's two suspect cases. Mm. Also, when the lab results went for suspect cases, the lab results did not get communicated back. And so those people that have been lab listed and been on a follow-up, I stayed on follow-up.
Okay.
Guess what happened? We're having huge contact with follow-up when essentially maybe only 40% of them should be followed.
Right.
So you're stringing the manpower.
Yeah.
And you're compromising what? Quality.
Yeah. So following too many contacts.
That someone should not be following.
Yeah.
So we have to sit there and redefine what is a dead body, what is a confirmed body,
okay.
When a body should be followed, when a body should be dragged. If we did a dead body and a swab comes in, 3 days results should come back to us.
Uh-huh.
Our dead body will have the list of contacts.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as the results come, we'll drop the contacts. How many days are, but the result will start speeding up the lab return date.
Okay.
And because now, because the way the lab return are flowing all around, so we had to have someone like Dakina who will compile the names for the lab result and tell us, guys, in contact tracing, 15 dead bodies, but 15, only 3 are positive. But before it will never happen like that, to associate name and lab results. So now you can say, okay, of the 15, only 2 positive before, so drop those contacts.
Mm.
Number 2, suspect case. A suspect case gives a definition, but he may not be Ebola, right?
Yeah.
But we'll say following them in the field.
Mm-hmm.
I will say to anything, Hans, push and push this.
Mm-hmm.
But during that, we reduce the number and why? We have now competent staff that gain skills, but they're not following anybody now.
Yeah.
So what happens is it's an issue of what? Quality now, mm-hmm. not quantity. Stream now for those who need to be followed and then keep them up. Because we have 2 new key policies to make. Mm-hmm. One, no contact was done in the community.
Okay.
Once that happened, we investigate them very thoroughly. We dismiss people. Because the goal is that if there's effective contact tracing going, the contact symptoms should be picked up.
Yeah.
And the ambulance should be investigated and taken to the ETU.
Yeah.
If a contact does in the community, it's a failure of contact tracing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we have to make that policy clear.
Interesting.
The second thing was that no contact should go to the ETU on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you went through a vehicle, it creates a lot of problems for you. The vehicle you roll, the level of exposure you created, so we made that policy clear. Who is symptomatic
okay.
should go to the ETU on its own.
Okay.
It should go so many of the contacting that be at the top of his job to be able to find the sick person, initiate a response by calling the case investigators who will come investigate
mm-hmm.
and then call the ambulance to take them to the ETU.
Okay. And so those two things you were able to basically capture the leakage that
it's
was
exactly the leakage. So take the sick before the time.
Yeah.
See from the dead body, see from the ETU. So basically you just see it, you just close the seal.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And by what time was this starting to work?
Oh, by November, December now we're doing it. December now we're getting there.
Okay.
We're already getting there December.
Right.
Then by January now, the cases sleep. Now what we're trying to do now, we had a whole muscle now in maps.
Yeah.
And so we get red for confirmed.
Mm.
Whenever there's a red, we're going to scan that place. So now we are going with Hans would say laser sharp response. That's what we're going in at.
Okay.
Very laser specific response. Snitch off. Yeah. Go around the area, snitch off.
Yeah.
But the point on the community I want, I probably left out very little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I wanted the co-founder for CDR, this office now the government gave to us. But I have to admit, by August and September, the seriousness of the outbreak jotted the communities into realities. I have to say that to you.
Yeah.
It was not all communities who went with built from the ground. Yeah. Some community already existed.
Yeah.
Had some structure going, they had to train them, create order. But they had them. I went community with guys. So
it means that there was some autonomous action from the community.
100% I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Yes. And there are people in the poverty. Urban slums don't trust people on only they hate institutions because they down, they went denying things all their years.
Yeah.
So they don't trust authorities, they only trust themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe in the, are you saying in the rural areas that would be less of a problem?
Yeah, rural areas, better served breads, well, organized. Yeah.
That's interesting.
I think rural may be more cultural.
Yeah.
But I will say to you, yeah, so, but my November, essentially, as I drove around town, some kind of organization going on. I have to admit, I've met a young group of youth students, university students who went online at me. Downloaded material before I met them. They were there.
Yeah.
Some American guy who had a little shop, he still worked with me. He would let the boys go in the field, he would pay them for the shop. Also, I would have to admit, the politicians in that place, the legislatures, it's like organizing their people. I don't, it's a desperation. Everyone jotted the reality.
Yeah.
What our push was, we saw it, talking about the red timing. So now we want to do, we want to create a network, a merge to bring everybody together on the same standard. If anything we did, I was our ability to take all of these communities and put them one brother for something and peace.
Yeah.
But they were doing it on their own.
Yeah.
Some of them were doing it already. And natural leaders rose among them. Some of them, school teachers.
But certainly, you know, you empowered those natural leaders.
Yes.
That's the key
thing. Yes. Find them, empower them. And
give them information to also know what to
say. Yes, exactly. And give them feedback.
Yeah.
And help them get results.
Yeah.
That was critical piece.
Yeah.
And then the distrust that they didn't trust again began, they begin to build trust in people like us and our system.
Yeah.
You know, we say to them, I will help you, but I can't do this, I will do this. You know, I tell people the story about the time I decided to quit from the response. We got into West Point, resistance, we met the people, things are going fine. This family lost a relative and they called, they did the right thing, right? They called, they left the house. We did not respond for 2 days. The battle, you know, and I'm driving leaving West Point, and they came to me. And the guy said to me, in my, because he speak my language, he said to me, you deceive us, you lie to us. We have called the day battle team 2 days, we don't have camp. We sleep in the day battle in the house.
Yeah.
And you know, I was just crying, so I went home and told him, I said, you know, I quit.
Yeah.
I said, I quit. Honestly, I said, I'm going to
quit. At what point was this?
I think this is, end of August, September.
Seems like
yesterday I quit. So the next morning, one of the young guys called me. He said, "Doc, where are you?" I said, "At home." He said, "Waiting for you. You're not coming."
Oh.
I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Ah, I mean, you better, come." So I said, and I told him, I said, "I gotta do it."
Yeah.
And then I called the Minister of Internal Affairs. I got angry. And I started to blast at him. I said, "You put my life at risk. Nothing that you have is trusted, and it trusts us as authority." And he said, "Mosoka, come down, I'm going to send an ambulance, and I will send a dead body team." So, and then we passed that stage, and then one of my friends from more than me, she bought an ambulance for West Point. So,
okay. Yeah,
so that's what I was saying to happen.
And so the communities did some of that themselves.
Yes, they said, "Well, we can't help ourselves."
Yeah.
They said that checkpoints, they said that vigilante.
Yeah.
They had different type of names. We went away and put them together, but they already were doing it. I can't tell anyone that.
Yeah.
Well, I had someone else say, my friend, those mixed young guys who are leaders, you know, who I think that if we use their energy for anything in Liberia, can do it because I saw them, I saw so much potential in them. So, a lack of the inaction or the extreme of the outbreak jutted them into reality.
Yeah.
And I think that the extreme of the Liberia outbreak led to the success of Liberia being the first country to go to zero. I'll let you that opinion.
I mean, what kind of metrics did you use for let's go back to contact tracing, surveillance, active surveillance. What things were you looking at to see that the system was improving?
We engage communities. We also coordinate to focus group discussions with
okay.
the guy.
Okay.
We engage communities. We talk to them. And we listen to them. They call us. They tell them to report to us what was happening.
Okay.
And someone will report. The contractor did not come to our house today. Someone will literally call and say, I did not see your contractor today. So the guy point. We get the power to call and to report.
I see.
Yes, we're letting them do. And also we look at the form, the quality of the form of the tracer. We said no eraser. Did you fill the form? And when there's sometimes with a close supervision, tell me what you know about this contact.
Yeah.
Explain what the contact. So we did that.
And you mentioned that you would sit down with the contact tracer and ask him in detail about a case.
Of course, detail.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, quite a, we remove dismiss supervisors. We dismiss contact tracers.
Okay.
We got better.
But this was only after you became the head in Montserrado, right?
I think also. I managed expectation. I never promised what I couldn't deliver.
Mm.
I could tell them no.
Yeah.
I want to be what I expected this and that. Can you give our houses buckets? I said, I can't promise you buckets.
Mm.
I don't have buckets.
Mm.
What I can promise you will be together with Trin.
Yeah.
If there's support, I'll let you know.
Yeah.
I will see more. The things we could do, we deliver from the get-go.
Mm.
I said, let's manage expectations. Let's know what we can do and can do.
Yeah.
We never promise we didn't deliver.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes, why men, the things we promise, we fought to get them done.
Mm.
I can't remember. Was it November, so when there was an outbreak among the criminals in West Point,
yeah,
they dropped addicts.
Yeah.
So the contractor said, when the first day, second day, the third day, they said they had not gotten food, they said they would not be allowed to be twist.
To don't deliver them.
Yeah, I said, yeah, gentlemen.
Yeah.
He said, Dr. Fala,
yeah.
Now you are here with the food. Because of the city, you kept the promise. I will keep the corridor open for 5 days, but after that, we'll reconsider. I said, good with me. So it was this negotiation skill, key, I think. That was the key.
Yeah.
And I was in West Point one time. The first time I entered West Point in the quarantine, I had a huge military car go with me to protect me. I said, gentlemen, I can't do this.
Mm.
I said, the only currency I've used is the currency of trust.
Yeah.
The guy saw a friend, he told me he would put plainclothes police behind me to protect me. I said, no, gentlemen. And you know, one thing I would always do was, because I'm in West Point, every day I know the criminals coming to me one day and say, you know, you are the true friend of West Point, you've never left us.
Yeah.
And that's true. From the 20th to the day West Point got I was there every day.
With this criminal gang situation?
In the criminal gang, in the prison, the guys trying to resolve the situation.
Yeah.
I was there, I never stopped going there every day.
Yeah.
And every time when I engage the group, I always do engage. There was something I picked up, a skill I learned was, when I'm looking in a hostile environment, I'll be watching for the eyes.
Mm.
If I see some sort of peace or someone's eyes, I will call that person aside. I always learn to do that.
I see.
And talk to that person one-on-one. It was something I read it well for us, and the other children around me pick it up.
Mm.
When we discuss the issue, we don't do the whole group because there's group dynamic like influence.
Yeah.
But if you find one or two people, you can take them aside and convince them, they can convince the others.
Mm.
So I don't learn all those kind of skills.
So it's kind of similar to what you did with the active case finders, is you look for individuals who may have some influence and who will listen to
it. Will listen to you, who trust you.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then, in the criminal, one thing I honestly realized Ebola was the hierarchy system among the criminal is even more powerful than government.
Yeah.
If you win the boss, you win everybody.
Yeah.
If you say, gentlemen, we're going to listen to this guy, it's over. So, just because of humor skill, and no school teaches you that. I didn't tell you that. No textbook teaches you that.
No.
No, I want a classroom. It's one in the boots on the ground, learning every day and feeling and learning. So, we learn all those symbols of our skills on only us, the team worker.
Yeah.
And I think the strength of that was I refused to sit in the office.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah, I just refused to sit in the office.
Mm.
I think that was it. I don't think it's unique to me. Many of those who did a great job were few guys.
Yes, yes. Right, so I want to quickly just confirm your story about a lady who had died towards the end of the outbreak. She died in Montserrado, and she told her family that she wanted to be buried outside in a rural area. They washed her, they dressed her up, and they actually used their hand to warm her head up. And then when they got to a checkpoint, they scanned.
True story.
Yeah.
In the height of the outbreak, she passed my back in the dress up nicely. Actually, happened around Somalia Drive.
Somalia Drive.
The dress up, I was telling her, and you're laughing when I'm doing that story. She got dressed nicely, and they lay on the ground, and someone sat, and they were going out of town to bury her.
And they scanned her, and she was normal temperature.
In the past, I changed the guy. And what that told me is the power of culture.
Yeah.
Ebola hates culture.
Mm.
When you hate people's culture, you hate the very fundamental that hold them together.
Yeah.
That's why the guys were doing the things they were doing. And so you got to find in the culture what you can take and shift around.
Yeah.
And I can tell you a true story, what we do in Cardwell is predominantly Muslims.
Yeah.
The way we sustain Cardwell was to gather an imam, and then we hire a Muslim burial team. So they still would do the prayer away, but the Muslim themselves would do it respecting the ritual and the culture.
Yeah, yeah.
It is such a powerful tool. I think Muslims use all that. I was telling you, the people are going to take that kind of desperate risk.
Yeah.
Because in the African culture, like West African culture, is that burial is a sign of last respect.
Yeah.
It's a sign of the unknown world. Nobody wants to compromise that.
Mm.
So you got to work with them along that era.
Yeah.
And that was, I never can forget, her husband wasn't talking to me. He said, "Musoka, I'm about to see your president. Tell me two things I'm going to tell your president." I said, "Hans, this Ebola will never end if we don't end cremation.
If we don't end cremation.
If we don't close cremation," I said, "the Ebola will never end." I said, "Hans, let me tell you something." I said, "Right now, Liberians are willing to accept the reality of their dead relative that they died from Ebola." I said, "But what they are not willing to accept is their relative have been cremated."
So it means they kept hiding people because of the cremation.
I said, "If this Ebola will end, Hans, tell the president to end cremation." Hans got angry one time when they bought the, he went to the president put it through, and they agreed to give $25,000 to buy the land.
Yeah.
And he got to the, Hans got mad, he said he was going to handcuff himself on the door of the minister.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, that's right. And so you're saying that the resistance to cremation never really went away?
Until the end of cremation.
Yeah. When did the story with the lady happen?
This was December.
December.
Yeah.
And cremation was still happening?
Yes.
Yeah.
Cremation happened a lot. But what we did, this is what we did. So we had a secret part. We had a meeting, I told her, I said, "You know what? I said, sometimes you do civil disobedience. I said, we have to do civil disobedience. I said, certain communities in Liberia, in Mosuraro, if they have a dead body, and they found a burial ground, we'll bury for them."
Yeah.
We agreed with them. We've had a government official position in West Point, Nkrutan, when there was a dead body, and they called us and they found a burial ground, we took the body and buried the ground. The burial team buried. We found that we don't have compromise. So the tension went on before official burial started. We started doing that thing. 2 weeks before government started official burial, that's the only way we could do it.
So how many people do you think were buried like this?
Because global communities came from this side. Maybe pretty close to 100 or 200 persons. I
remember. Okay.
Global community was doing that same thing. Global community was so. Because global community came and went to rural Mosuraro. Because Urban Mosuraro was Red Cross.
Red Cross.
And Red Cross was built of the book. We had a opinion of being a fellow gentleman. We can't follow the book all the time.
Yeah.
If we follow the book, it'll be culturally sensitive.
Yeah.
So we had global community was doing it normally in the rural Mosuraro already.
If you had to take one or two key lessons from your experience, how do you address those things, which are, well, it's cultural, yes, but it's also human. I can't touch my child, you know. So what were some of the key lessons that got people to
cooperate? Say two things that I would say.
Yeah.
I would say, and I've learned it, 10 years, 20 years, I would say do it. One, in any response, listen. Listen to the people. Humble yourself, take away all your dreaming. Listen to the people. I tell people, I say, I would rather lose 2 days listening then say this is an emergency, let me solve it quick in 1 hour.
Yeah.
You will feel. You will end up losing more days. Yeah. Because you know what happened to an emergency mode? We want quick answers, right?
Yeah.
So we don't do it. It happened to me in West Point when I led the information of the Holding Center.
Yeah.
My intention was right, but I was miscarrying intention. And so the problem is construed. First step, listen. Two, the communities has a power to change anything. They are resourceful. They've existed before us. If the day we put that into practice, we listen to the community, we work with them, help them see what is right and what is wrong, and they see us as their true partner. I don't think there's anything we can fight. That the two lessons for me, the couple, two things. The power that lies within the communities. How do you listen to them? How do you help to find the good in them? How do you find the true leaders in the communities to help them to dispel the wrong people? How do you help them feel empowered to respond? I think that has taught me the most important lesson, that the power of the communities is so, so critical. Use the influence of the community to shape the culture to a good one. That would be my take home. All the thing is good and everything is good, but at the end of the day, if you are going to find the sick, if you're going to find the contact, the community has to talk to you. And we can only talk to you if they trust you and they respect you and you treat them like you are them at the same. People are human. At the end of the day, everything, you are human. That's my message.